Week two is in the books, and we have a big, big, big show for you to recap all of Sunday's action. I do a little monologue about Sunday Night Football off the top and why I'm freaked out about the Bears and why I'm ultra excited about a Texans player that I bet you can guess without even listening to this show. Then Andy Behrens joins me to recap the rest of week two Sunday slate. Some issues in the Chiefs offense. The Bucs are flying high at this point, and man, are the Saints the value offense of the 2024 fantasy football season? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, September 16th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball because week two's Sunday slate is in the books. Andy Behrens will join me for the next part of the show to recap all of the games on Sunday. But as usual, I'm here to recap a little solo recap of the Sunday night game, which thankfully Andy Behrens is not joining me. I don't know where Andy is right now, but after that performance on Sunday, he should not be anywhere near a microphone. So let's get into it. Texans 19, Bears 13. Hoo boy, lot to say about this one. As usual, we're going to do this in the care, don't care format. Let's start off with the thing I care about. And what that is that the Bears offense has serious issues right now. I'm sure it was said on this podcast. I know I felt this way about the wide receivers specifically, but a lot of people talked about, look, this is the best situation that we've ever seen a number one overall pick quarterback walk into here in Chicago. And again, a lot of it made sense, right? The receivers, the top three guys were very good. It was very intriguing to consider a quarterback as talented as Caleb Williams walking in here with DJ Moore, a guy that played, like a superstar receiver last year. A guy in Roma Dunze, who I really liked, was picked in the top 10. And a veteran in Keenan Allen, who I do think is a declining player, but still can be a layup option. You can also account for the fact that this defense was on the rise last season. Again, it was a good situation, seemingly. But man, I said it on Sunday, this good situation sure looks a lot like right now. And there's really no other way to say it. Look, Caleb Williams doesn't look good. He looks like an overwhelmed rookie quarterback. And it was actually kind of striking watching him share the field with CJ Stroud, who gave us an abnormal rookie quarterback season last year. What Stroud did last season is the outlier. That is not what most rookie quarterbacks do. It's not what Caleb Williams is doing so far. That is for sure. He looks rattled. He looks uncomfortable. He doesn't make good decisions. And he's a little devil may care with the ball is kind of the best way to describe it. But again, to pull back to CJ Stroud, when we get a strong performance from a rookie quarterback, one of those unusual rookie quarterback performances, it's usually because the environment, the ecosystem, the people in charge of this thing are doing some heavy lifting to elevate that rookie quarterback. Think about Herbert in Los Angeles, you know, with Shane Steichen. Think about Bobby Slowick last year with Stroud in Houston. Bruce Arians with Andrew Luck back in the day. That's not going on here in Chicago. You know, again, I'm like, we should hold Williams accountable for his play. I'm sure he is holding himself accountable for his play. But what's going on from the offensive design perspective is bad. I mean, for the second straight week, the Bears had absolutely no answers to pressure. Because for all the excitement about those top three receivers, the interior of the offensive line was absolutely not discussed enough. And they could not pick up a stunt. They could not pick up a blitz to save their life on Sunday. I mean, watching that unit go against a D'Amico Ryans coached front, it was embarrassing. It was shocking. It was horrifying. Next Gen Stats had that the Texans blitzed the Bears on 42% of Williams' dropbacks, which is the highest blitz rate for this team over the last two seasons. That tells you all you need to know. Williams amassed 15 yards on those plays and he took 5 sacks. Overall, through two games, Williams has 3.7 yards per attempt, 3 picks, and 9 sacks when under pressure. We're going to talk about the Seahawks offense later in this show. Let's just put it this way. Watching this year's Seahawks offense juxtaposed to last year's Seahawks offense and the answers that that group did not have against pressure and the answers that were provided to Geno Smith today against the New England Patriots against pressure with some of the route concepts that were there. And then again, watching that with what we saw on Chicago with Chicago on Sunday Night Football. Yeah, it's pretty striking. I wonder what the common thread is there. I don't know. Shane Waldron doing a lot of designing plays for like DeAndre Carter. You know, DeAndre Swift design plays here. I mean, we've got a guy like DJ Moore out there. It just doesn't seem like he has enough layup routes. Doesn't seem like he has enough designed targets. And Moore's one of the best receivers with the ball in his hands. He's a guy who can play at any different spot, and we're just not getting any of that right now. Someone pointed out to me on Twitter that we're getting all these looks for DeAndre Carter and Gerald Everett and Keenan Allen's not playing. This sounds a lot like the 2022 Chargers offense. They can't run the ball worth a damn either, and their front is a mess. Yeah, it does feel very Chargers-esque. It's just operated by a rookie quarterback instead of a guy in Justin Herbert, who's one of the top five players at the position. My feeling on the Bears right now is that, yeah, we were excited about the receivers. Yo, those receivers aren't even playing. I don't know what Roma Dunze's out there doing with like a knee injury that sounded like a multi-week injury. Suddenly he's playing all of a sudden. Keenan Allen's not playing. This receiver core we were excited about, that I was excited about, that doesn't even exist at this point. Instead, we're getting a lot of looks to guys that fantasy managers have heard of but aren't even close to needle movers. They're closer to like net negatives. I mean, Gerald Everett, 2024, what are we doing here? They were so quick to get out there and get DeAndre Swift. Not sure what the plan is there. So all this to say, we care about the fact that this offense is a mess, because until we see anything differently, I hate to say this type of stuff, but we are in firmly believe it when we see it territory. I'd love to be early. I'd love to tell you like, oh yeah, just keep rocking with your Bears, because you never know when that explosion is coming. After what we've seen through the first 2 weeks, I don't think there is any reason to proactively play. I mean, yeah, you probably have to play DJ Moore. I don't know if you have better options because he went really high in drafts. But until we see anything from Williams, anything from Shane Waldron to give us confidence, I'm probably not even remotely considering any of these other Bears players in fantasy lineups. That's the bottom line takeaway there. Again, you're probably stuck with DJ Moore. I don't feel great about it. He's the guy that's definitely going to go down, rest of season rankings, everything like that. For all these other players, you're going to have better options. I am firmly in believe it when we see it territory with this entire Bears offense. And there's just a part of me that unfortunately feels like, even when we do get the receivers healthy, if Dunze and Allen get back out there closer to 100%, I do kind of think we need to dramatically dial back the overinflated expectations that propagated not just the fantasy football industry, but the NFL industry as a whole. Okay, cleansing breath. That was a lot of negativity. Let's talk positive about something, because the thing I don't care about coming out of Sunday Night Football is putting a ceiling on Nico Collins's outlook. You guys, Nico Collins is so, so good at football. This was not a perfect game for the Houston Texans. They probably should have put this game away a long time ago. A lot of penalties for a team that I do think is well coached. But what was pretty damn near perfect on Sunday was the C.J. Stroud to Nico Collins connection. You guys, if you listen to the show, you know I've been a big fan of Nico Collins for a long time. I thought he was an above average player on film via reception perception in his first two seasons. And then last year, he took his jump into that next stratosphere. You know, his man press coverage success rates are up there with the elite players in the league. I think everything that he showed us last year puts him as a top 10 real life receiver. Bare minimum, he is top 10. I think the conversation starts at 10. Then you start weighing him against guys that you'd have like 7, 8, 9, whatever. But bare minimum, top 10 receiver. He's right there with those guys that I always say are like top of tier 2 true superstar players in the league. Like, okay, CJ Stroud, what about how he talks up Tank Dell? Who cares? Or Stephon Diggs, he's coming in via trade. That's great. I think Diggs is kind of like a top 15-ish maybe receiver, but Nico's just on an entirely different level, and it's so obvious. I mean, everything this guy does is excellent. He wins as an X receiver against press man coverage, like I mentioned. He's a high-end separator. He has vice grip hands, whether it's on his numbers or away from his frame. He can catch that thing. He has one of my favorite skills that a wide receiver can have, which is he just so cleanly gets open, catches the ball, and immediately transitions to a yak threat. Those are what the best run after catch receivers have. Nico has it all. I mean, he's, like I said, top 10 real life receiver. And where I think he has taken his game to another level along with his quarterback this year. And you saw it several times on Sunday night. When you need them to go off script, go into creation mode, those guys have that mind meld where Collins knows exactly what to do. Stroud knows exactly where to find him. It's just a beautiful, beautiful connection right now with two players that, again, I think are in the top 10 of their respective positions. So, yeah, I mean, again, you could pick little nits about his target share and all this stuff. Bare minimum, we do not care about target share and all these type of things. When we're talking about a top 10 wide receiver and a top 10 quarterback, and that is what Houston has. That is what the reality of this situation is. So you can forget it. Oh, calling him the best wide receiver in a crowded Houston room, that's obvious. Great fantasy pick in the early round three range, fully evident. At this point, I'm actually ready to view Nico Collins in fantasy football like closer to where I view him in my real life receiver rankings, which I said is like top 10 bare minimum. And you start talking to me about like wide receiver 7, 8, 9 around there. I mean, I think I'd rather have him than a guy like Garrett Wilson. Why would I rather have Garrett Wilson than Nico Collins right now at this point? Garrett Wilson's a great player. I think they're actually pretty close in terms of like real life rankings. One guy's playing with CJ Stroud. Another guy's playing with what's left of Aaron Rodgers. And on a Nate Hackett offense. I mean, give me a break. And how much longer are we going to go until we're starting to talk about Nico Collins outpacing guys like Tyreek Hill, who were drafted in the top five, who have quarterback questions right now? Like, this is the rest of season outlook for Nico Collins. That is how high he is going to fly this season. So I don't care about any of these like fake little ceiling things that people have for Nico Collins. He's going to smash all those ceilings going forward. All right, it felt really good to end that on a positive note. And now we can transition to the rest of the week 2 games. Andy Behrens is going to join me for that. So let's get into it. Joining me now is the man himself, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy? Hell of a week 2 in the books here.
Hell of a week. It's a pleasure to be here. Kind of a little bit of carnage in week 2. You know, we spend much of the offseason warning people that the NFL is just kind of ruled by chaos and injuries. And we really felt it in week 2. That was messy. There's some fun stuff in there, but it's really going to leave a mark on a lot of fantasy rosters.
Yes, definitely a lot of carnage. Pretty much it sounds like the best first round pick you could make this year was to, I don't know, take a pass.
Trade down.
Trade. Yeah. The best first round pick you could make this year was indeed the analytics move. Trade down. Get out of the first round. Not a lot of great first round picks out there right now, whether situationally, injuries, whatever. But it is what it is. Because, Andy, I will say there was a lot of fun in week 2. A lot of instances where, hey, maybe we overreacted a little bit to what we saw in week 1. But in some other situations, maybe the week 1 warning signs were merited. Let's go into a game that just wrapped up as we're taping this. Andy, I think the audience probably knows how we tape these shows on Sunday, but we are taping this between when Chiefs and Bengals wrap up and when the Bears kick off. So truthfully, by the time you're listening to this, you have no idea how Andy Behrens is feeling in real time, but I think I've still got him at a pretty good zone right now to talk about these games that have happened so far. So let's go into it. Chiefs 26, Bengals 25. The Chiefs get a last second win, Andy Behrens. I want to talk about those Chiefs here who kind of escaped the jaws of defeat here with a late pass interference that I think was a totally fair call. Yeah. And I know everybody gets a little up in arms when it's the Chiefs and the refs and the whole thing. Thought that was a totally fair call. Unfortunate because I think the Bengals played a pretty good game. I'm actually curious, despite the fact that the Chiefs won this game, I don't feel that great about what I saw from the Chiefs offense today. How about yourself?
No, wouldn't feel great about that. You're right. You're right to call out the fact that, like, if you have the agenda that the NFL is, you know, sort of in the bag for the Chiefs, I guess you have stuff to point to. But I thought that was pretty clearly like the defender arrived early and you got to call that. Like, you're calling that in the middle of a game, so you should definitely call it at the end of the game. On top of not feeling comfortable about everything that we saw from the Chiefs, and you know, we saw a couple of turnovers in there. We also have to deal with like a late Isaiah Pacheco injury. Not sure as we speak right now, not sure the nature of it exactly, but it looked, you know, either ankle or knee or both, bent back pretty awkwardly and, you know, unnaturally, and then went over to the sideline, sat down, and we never saw him again in the game. So that's a huge ongoing storyline for us. But yeah, not a lot of reason to feel comfortable. Saw some of the usual Chiefs gimmickry when they get down to the goal line. Like you're hurting if you wanted that touchdown that Isaiah Pacheco had fully earned, and they bring the tackle eligible in and throw. Of course they threw it to the tackle. Of course they did. Fun game all around, but I hear you on not feeling entirely comfortable with the Chiefs offense, because we didn't really, I don't know, there were a lot of weird players went off in this one on both sides. Went off is a little strong. Nobody had like an incredible game. Huge play by Travis Kelce was negated by penalty. You know, I'm looking back on some of the things that could have counted and didn't count. Nobody really with a massive performance here. And Xavier Worthy, who was set up by, you know, some talk during the week that really should have got him going, was not particularly noisy in this one either.
Yeah, actually, you bring up that holding and Xavier Worthy. That's actually where I want to start this conversation about Kansas City, because you talked about it on FFL this morning that sometimes week one overreactions to rookies can lead us astray from a negative standpoint. Yeah. I do think that Xavier Worthy's performance in week one did sort of lead us astray in a positive standpoint, because you know, he scored two touchdowns, one rushing, one receiving. The rushing play obviously was just some classic vintage Andy Reid stuff. The receiving touchdown was a little bit of a broken coverage there between the two Ravens defensive backs. But going back and watching that game, I think two things were really clear about Xavier Worthy. One, that there's no question that his presence, and I'm talking about that Thursday night game against the Ravens, there's no question that his presence is going to dictate coverages for this Kansas City offense. Yeah. Teams are going to be afraid of his speed, especially from a safety standpoint, you know, too high, things like that, the way they're going to shell things. It's going to open things up underneath for the Kansas City offense, especially a guy like Rashee Rice, who leads a team in receiving today. He catches the only offensive skill position player touchdown. Wanya Morris, the tackle, as you mentioned, was the guy who caught Patrick Mahomes' other touchdown. Also did not, just while we're on the subject of the goal line stuff, did not love the deep screen to Travis Kelce.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Old man Kelce at this point. I know Taylor Swift was going nuts in the box or whatever. But he clearly tackled at the 1 yard line. Taylor, come on! If you're going to beat, learn ball, Taylor Swift.
Thrown nowhere near the goal line. Like, I thought it was pretty heroic that he even got as close as he did.
Yeah, especially September Kelce at this point in his career. He's not making that play at this point in his career. But back on subject here. But the other thing about Xavier Worthy is just I do not think he is ready to be like a high volume wide receiver in the NFL. You know, you mentioned it. There was some talking from Cam Taylor-Britt, the Bengals cornerback, who's 5'11", 200 pounds, you know, a bigger corner. And on the interception where
shout out to him, an all-time interception today. Yeah.
An all-time interception after some all-time talk this week, which, you know, the Bengals lose. Of course, they couldn't actually close the deal here. But Cam Taylor-Britt certainly held up his end of the bargain on that play. You know, Xavier Worthy is the farthest outside receiver on the boundary, and Cam Taylor-Britt gets physical with him at the line of scrimmage, and they try to exploit Xavier Worthy's speed by throwing him a go ball. And I mean, the coverage is tight. He's not open at all. And Cam Taylor-Britt, in addition to having great coverage, also makes a great play on the ball. So it's a great play by him, but I think it also shows you where Xavier Worthy is at this point in his career. And then you mentioned that holding penalty that negated Travis Kelce's big play. Kingsley Suamatia, the left tackle, the rookie left tackle, who they're just like, yep, we're just walking in. He's having a starting job. He got creamed in this game. Trey Hendrickson took him to the woodshed, snap after snap, to the point that they even pulled him late in some downs, late in the game, in favor of receiving specialist Wanya Morris. So I just think that, again, I'm not going to do Chiefs panic. I'm never going to do Chiefs panic again at all. They won this damn game. They're 2-0. Who cares? But I think when we're looking from a fantasy perspective, I don't even know if Xavier Worthy's like an every week start. And I do think the fact that, you know, we're back to second leading receiver here is Justin Watson with 22 yards. I do think the loss of Marquise Brown is actually going to prove to be a pretty significant one.
Yeah, I was going to say, all of a sudden we're looking at this receiving core, and I think, you know, at least for myself coming into this season, I was like, wow, yeah, it's never going to be as bad as it was last year again. Now this receiving core looks stacked. you take Hollywood Brown out of it, and they sure could use a guy like Hollywood Brown. Yeah. You know, so that's a huge concern. Not that they can't add in season, but that's always difficult, and you're subject to the whims of another team too. So yeah, all of a sudden that looks a little bit problematic. I want to say on the other side of this one, even though Cincinnati loses, Yosevash made a couple of like incredible plays, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a high volume day for him, but the two touchdowns, one of them was just like an all-time toe drag. That was great. And the other was just a filthy route where he, where he really deked somebody and came back open, like wide open on the outside. Really impressive game by him. And he was pretty buzzy as we got deeper into August. And I thought he really showed up today. Mike Gesicki with as good a game as you can expect from Mike Gesicki too. I'm not sure what else the Bengals could have done on this day.
Yeah, I was going to actually say there's a pretty good juxtaposition between these two teams where we got nothing really from the ancillary players in Kansas City, where we actually got a lot from the guys in Cincinnati, where, you know, Jamar Chase has 4 catches for 35 yards, was super frustrated by what he thought was a hip drop tackle late in the game that did not get called, was very emotional about that. But you wouldn't know it because Joe Burrow, who, you know, I was pretty skeptical about coming to this game, actually ends up with a nice performance because of guys like Mike Gesicki, because of guys like Andre Yoshivas with the 2 targets. You know, even Jermaine Burton gets out there for 2 targets, 1 catch, his first NFL catch, 47 yards, where he just smoked the guy off the line of scrimmage on a go route. I thought that was impressive. You know, the running backs were what they were, a couple of nice plays from Chase Brown. But, you know, I don't know that any of these guys certainly are in the circle of trust from a fantasy perspective. But I think if the Bengals are going to get rolling here like they always do deeper into the season, I think it will have to be because of contributions from some of these players that we just mentioned.
Yeah, I also think if you were worried about Joe Burrow because you spent the week looking at video of him like rolling his wrist during the prior game, like you could feel good about Joe Burrow. He looks like he does not seem bothered. I think the ball's coming out of his hand just fine. As soon as he gets T. Higgins back, which, you know, hopefully that happens within weeks, a week, I don't know. He gets T. Higgins back with what he's already found on the roster. I think better days are ahead for Burrow. He's probably a buy low candidate right now.
Yeah, I think there are definitely better days ahead whenever T. Higgins gets back for Joe Burrow. Let's transition to the next game here. Buccaneers 20, Lions 16. The Bucs are legit, man. And this offense was once again Not perfect. There was, you know, the interception by Baker was kind of a "what are we doing here?" moment. The run game was, again, definitely not impressive. I mean, if you were hanging on to that one couple like long no yards before contact, like a bunch of free yards for Bucky Irving in week one against the Commanders, didn't see it in this game. Neither running back really impressed here. Rashad White was a little dinged up during this game as well. That's fair to mention. But Chris Godwin goes off. Only 5 players got a target from Baker Mayfield in this game, and only 4 players caught passes. That is the type of concentration that we dream of in fantasy football.
We love it. Yeah, we absolutely love it. The touchdown to Godwin, really fun play. Great day for him. Like, stellar start to his season. Baker, not perfect, obviously. Only attempted 19 throws. I'm looking at the box score now. Only completed 12. Had back-to-back great runs near the goal line. Like, juked a guy to the ground. Juked a couple of guys to the ground really fun performance by him. So they did enough. Aiden Hutchinson was terrific. Was a
nightmare
game wrecker, but also kind of, you know, I mean, Detroit's defense, I think, is going to ultimately be good. This was a fun game, but he was a difference maker, and there were not enough difference makers perhaps on that side around him. Some gutsy play calling by Dan Campbell per his usual. The fake punt was awesome. You know, the day that we should have expected from both backs, right? Like, so far we're having a season in which Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery again can coexist and both be totally startable fantasy commodities in the same week. That was encouraging. You're right about the Bucs backfield though. That was a mess. And coming into the season, we were like that, you know, the hope for Bucky Irving was really pinned to the idea that, you know, Rashad White just has not been an efficient rusher. And so, you know, there's a lot of noise in yards per carry, and I don't like to point to somebody's yards per carry and say that's the rusher he is. But he also did not do like a lot after contact last year. There's not there's not a lot of flash to his game as a runner. So I think there is ultimately going to be an opportunity for Bucky Irving to take a bigger role here, but nothing happened for either guy in week two.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield, according to Next Gen Stats, has now thrown 100 plus yards to slot receivers in each of the first two games. And if you look at where those passes are coming from, it's not over the middle because that's never been Baker's game. It's all stuff breaking to the outside, but coming from guys that are lined up in the slot because they're doing so much to get Chris Godwin free. They're doing so much to get like Jalen McMillan involved, even if it's just eye candy stuff. I just really love what the Bucs offense is doing right now, because you're right to mention this Lions defense. I was pretty high on them going into the season. You know, shout out to me. I make a lot of predictions in this business, and people know to come to me for edge rusher expertise. Aiden Hutchinson was actually my defensive player of the year pick on Football 301. So feeling pretty good about that after a 4.5 sack game in this one. Yeah, this Lions defense is not the same old cookie cutter, like, oh yeah, we just start everybody against them. So with that in context, I think even though this isn't a crazy box score performance by really anybody other than Godwin, I liked, again, like a lot of what I saw from the Bucs offense. So feeling pretty good about them right now. Let's go on the flip side here, though, to Detroit's offense, which, you know, was not the Detroit Lions offense that we necessarily come to know and love. 16 points, no passing touchdowns in this game. Jared Goff throws two interceptions that were pretty Goffy. They were very, like, if you're down on Jared Goff, and I'm not really down on Jared Goff, I actually kind of respect what Jared Goff has become. These were pretty like, oh yeah, Todd Bowles got him on a few things and they were just some questionable decisions. But we saw a return to prominence for Amon-Ra St. Brown. We did not see that for Sam Laporta. And what we saw definitely was Jameson Williams is still involved in this offense, 11 targets in week two.
Yeah. If you, this is a perfect beginning to the season for anybody who bet big on Jameson Williams, right? And you could obviously see it a little bit at the end of last year. He had multiple touchdowns in the last postseason game, but also had come into this one having seen something like 25 targets over his previous four regular season games. So this was already trending up at the end of last season into the playoffs, and now, I mean, an 11 target game off of a 9 target game. I don't know what else you could possibly want to see in there. These aren't just like, I mean, it's Jared Goff. So he's not chucking deep to Jameson Williams, you know, 10 times a game. These are all levels of the field. And that is, you know, I mean, if there's an argument that the Jameson Williams production is really going to take from Sam Laporta, you know, when we start seeing these, like all this short stuff to Jameson, that, you know, that's Sam's turf. And Sam was out there running routes. Like, Sam was never coming off the field and they run behind him still. I don't think he had a bad game, like real life game, but very few looks in this offense, which is alarming. And, you know, if you want to tell me right now that like Trey McBride is the tight end one, I'm open to it.
Well, there haven't exactly been very many good picks at tight end this year. So you can't be too bummed about that part of it. But, you know, we said in the previous show, Andy, I think really rang true with Jameson Williams that I kind of had him in the George Pickens, Tank Dell zone. And I still think that's probably right for him. You know, that sort of up and down wide receiver three, you know, 5 catches for 79 yards from a bottom line standpoint, that doesn't look crazy. But the actual results of it, you know, 11 targets, I do think that actually might get him to graduate out of that zone. Obviously, need to see more, but there's a chance that he graduates out of that volatile zone. Same thing with George Pickens, by the way, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But overall, yeah, you know, like I said in the beginning, or like I said in the recap show and then in the previous show last week, that if Williams is going to hold this role down, it is going to change the volume distribution of this offense. And I think so far, Laporta looks like the guy who's losing out here. St. Brown, I mean, 19 targets in this game. Zero panic about St. Brown, obviously, but it is worth noting he picked up an injury late in this game, and, you know, he's probably going to get some imaging this week, so that is something to keep an eye on. I do think that, you know, late in this game when St. Brown's not on the field, as much as I like what I've seen from Jameson Williams, they're just a totally, totally different offense without St. Brown out there. So that would be pretty cataclysmic if he has to miss any time.
Yeah, there's no direct replacement for Amon-Ra St. Brown. I feel like he may have picked up something like early in the, it felt like he, I don't know, he's one of those guys that like limps around a little bit and often comes back and it's fine. But I felt like he was limping for a fair chunk of this game. And by the end, he was clearly compromised.
Yeah, clearly compromised. The Dallas Cowboys defense was clearly compromised in week number two, because that's the next game we're going to here. Despite producer Colin trying to say, oh, no, this game could be an email. Oh, no, 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 no. Andy and I are adamant that Saints 44, Cowboys 19 is a game that we really care about. And I care about it for a couple different reasons. But let's start with the New Orleans Saints and 44 damn points, Andy Behrens. I'll just table set this with one. I was very excited about weirdly excited about the Saints offense in the offseason because of the hire of Clint Kubiak and the fact that the Saints were getting new offensive ideas for the first time in 20 years. But I didn't want to get too over my skis with the results from week one because it was against the damn Panthers, who couldn't do anything this week either. So we'll get to them in the email section for sure. But seeing it against the Cowboys, who, look, I come away from this game raising an eyebrow at Mike Zimmer, that's for sure. But week one, I thought the Cowboys defense was great. So for the Saints to come out here and basically roll over everything that we saw from week one to this week, I think is a big deal for fantasy going forward.
A huge deal. Clint Kubiak basically pitching a shutout. Like the first, you know, the stat was everywhere, but the first 15 drives for Derek Carr this season ended in points. That's crazy. That is absolutely wild. At halftime in this game, they had 35 points and 310 total yards of offense. Like, just an absolute juggernaut. That was nuts. They're maximizing Rashid Shaheed. Like, we may have undersold him. He's everybody's preseason sleeper at wide receiver, and they're getting everything they can out of him. They're getting him a couple looks as a rusher each game, and nobody can hang with him deep, and they will throw to him against any coverage deep, and it works. He's just been incredible. And then Kamara looks like vintage Kamara. Too early for victory laps, unimportant to ever take victory laps, but I will say that I thought Kamara looked fine last year, and I know the numbers weren't there in terms of an efficiency standpoint, but I thought he looked to my eye, there wasn't a whole lot of difference between last year's Alvin Kamara and the previous year's Alvin Kamara. Like, he just didn't look like he'd lost anything to me, and he's been crazy good. And he's good when he gets a rushing lane, and he was pretty good against Dallas even when he didn't necessarily have a clear wide rushing lane. I just thought he was fantastic. This offense is humming. And then next week they get the Eagles, and that, you know, that we're having this conversation before we see what happens on Monday night, but man, the Eagles had some vulnerabilities against the Packers in opening week. And last year they were a defense that we were picking on all the time, right? They were second to last in terms of yards allowed, touchdowns allowed, passing wise. Man, I'm feeling really good about Derek Carr now. I don't know how to rank these guys now, because I'm probably feeling too bullish on Derek Carr, but man, that guy was dealing. It's the weirdest thing to say, but Derek Carr was really dealing.
He really was, man. Before we talk about the passing game, I do want to talk about the run game here, because you mentioned Alvin Kamara, which, you mentioned victory laps. Like, we don't take a lot of victory laps on this show, because taking these self-important victory laps it's loser behavior. It's also loser behavior, by the way, if, like, you don't allow an analyst to, like, talk about things they thought in the past and be like, oh, and now I'm seeing this. That's also loser behavior. Like, we can talk about things that we believed and how we're seeing them play out in the games. And I will say, for all of my positivity about the passing game in New Orleans, which certainly sounded crazy to most people in the offseason, I was a little skeptical about how the offensive transition would take over in the run game, because I wasn't sure what Kamara really had left. And I also wasn't sure about the offensive line. What they're doing, both in the pass game and in the run game, is doing wonders for the offensive line. It's kind of, all the motion and the play action and stuff like that is classic pass game ways to hide an offensive line that's a little questionable. But I also just think they're kind of kicking ass in the run game. The rookie tackle looks good. A lot looks good here in New Orleans. Alvin Kamara averaged 5.8 yards per carry with a long run of 15 on his 20 carries in this game. Just steady stuff. He obviously scored 4 touchdowns, 1 on a screenplay as well. But even like Jamal Williams and Taysom Hill chipped in with 5.5 yards per carry. These guys are, Kamara is certainly going to outkick his ADP if that keeps up. But to bring it back to the pass game, man, you mentioned Derek Carr is dealing, and I just love the structure of the Saints offense right now. So according to Next Gen Stats, 75% of their plays were under center in week two. They used motion on 74% of the plays, averaged 9.5 yards per play with a 61.5% success rate when using motion, which is nuts. Carr used play action on 59% of his dropbacks, which is actually more than week one. And again, remember, they were dead last in motion and dead last in play action last season. This is just so different, and you can see all of it kind of like the flowering coming to play here in this Saints offense. Shaheed is being maximized. I mean, Chris Olave had a run after catch play in this game. People think Chris Olave like can't run after the catch. This is a guy who's run just nothing but like go routes and curl routes the last two seasons. I wonder why he doesn't have any yards after the catch. You get him, you get under center, you have him run an in route, a big in route on play action. Yeah, he's going to have a catch and run play. So even though he only has 81 yards, which if you're whining about a receiver having 81 yards, grow up. Give me a break. Jamar Chase out here with 35 yards. Give me a break. Chris Olave, 81 yards. You'll take it. Leading receiver in terms of targets. Like, I think all these guys deserve a stock up going forward with how this offense looks.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Derek Carr right now, as we speak, ahead of the Sunday night game, is the number two fantasy scorer at quarterback for the week in a game in which he attempted 16 throws. Like, that's just crazy. Like, you'd allow that for some quarterbacks, people with like actual rushing ability. And he did get a 1 yard touchdown plunge in this one. But man, like, that is not something that you would think Derek Carr is capable of. But they absolutely just, especially in the first half, just eviscerated Dallas.
Yeah. I do think, yeah, I don't want to have a long Derek Carr conversation. So let's put that to bed. We can do that some other time. I mean, what do you want to say about Dallas here, man? Just got pretty outclassed early from an offensive perspective. I don't really know that we should have a bunch of takeaways here. It's worth noting that Jalen Tolbert had 9 targets, which led the team, 82 yards. Shout out to producer Colin after, I'm sure he's had an unbearable day with this loss, but he was big on the Jalen Tolbert bandwagon, which was, you know, like maybe him and Jalen Tolbert were on the bandwagon. Brandon Cooks notably on the bandwagon as well, but he looks like a guy that could at least contribute in this offense, which long term will be good. But I don't really know how much we can really take away from this game.
Tolbert had like highlights too. I mean, he had like downfield, you know, single coverage highlights. I thought he was really impressive, and he also had the effort play on the loose ball.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Really, really good game from him. The backfield is, I don't know, maybe it's just going to go like this all year. The snaps were basically split between Ezekiel Elliott and Rico Dowdle. Dowdle, like slight edge in terms of touches, but didn't really amount to much of anything. I don't think you have a lot of takeaways here in terms of the Dallas offense, because no team can keep pace with, like, you know, a 35-point 300-yard half, which is what New Orleans threw at them. And I don't blame them for not being able to, you know, hang 40 on the Saints while the Saints were hanging 40 on them. So it was fine. I thought Dak looked fine. CeeDee Lamb obviously made enough plays to make a difference in fantasy. So I don't feel like you can feel particularly bad about the Dallas offense. They just, on this day, couldn't hang with a Saints offense that was unstoppable.
All right, let's go to the next game here. Raiders 26, Ravens 23. We go from one mega sad Yahoo employee to a very happy Yahoo employee somewhere. Shout out to Jason Fitz for this Raiders win here. Our host on Fantasy Football Live, if you're not familiar with Fitz, who's a solid guy, all things considered. But his Raiders get a big win here against the Ravens. And I will say this about old Fitzy's Raiders, Andy Behrens. I got to give him a lot of credit here. I did not think they were going to win this game. I thought they might get smacked around in this game. Their defense, and especially the pass rush, deserves a ton of credit for this win. But I will say, I did not see this offense being able to kind of just go shred mode in the passing game late in this one. You know, Davante Adams, great second half. He finishes with 12 targets, over 100 yards and a touchdown. And Brock Bowers, just on these quick routes, man, has been pretty lethal through his first couple games.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of the takeaway. If you need a fantasy takeaway on the Raiders side, it's it's got to be the immediate emergence of Brock Bowers. And we've, you know, we've seen some of this in recent years at the tight end position that, you know, it used to be, obviously I have done this job forever and we never expected anything from a rookie tight end, from a first or a second year tight end. Like that was just the rule. Like it was a huge exception and usually touchdown related when a young tight end would pop for fantasy purposes. And Brock Bowers all of a sudden just looks like he looks like he's been in the league for 4 years. Like he looks like an old pro. And he was great again. Nine catches for him, nine catches for Devontae. It is a pretty streamlined passing game. Not a lot of action for Jacoby Myers, but just enough. Nothing out of the backfield. Not that you expected much of anything out of the backfield for against Baltimore. But Baltimore's defense is going to be a separate discussion, right? Because this is just not last year's Baltimore defense, yeah. And they're. You know, the coaching staff on the defensive side is just scattered all over the league now, from last year's version of that defense to this year's. I believe they've only generated two takeaways this year after leading the league last season. So it's just not the same group at all. They did get Gardner Minshew to the ground five times, and it didn't matter. The Raiders get a win. Baltimore's allowed 53 total points, I want to say, through two games, which is just that's not who the Ravens were last year. But I don't want to make that entirely about Baltimore, because the Raiders did a bunch of things well, like good game for them and super impressive early performance from Bowers.
Yeah, again, I'll give Minshew a lot of credit for firing down to Devontae Adams in the vertical game in the second half. That was impressive on his part. But yeah, I feel like the air yards for Adams and Brock Bowers really tells the story. According to Next Gen Stats, just about 12 air yards per target for Devontae Adams and then 6.4 for Brock Bowers. That's going to be the way this thing goes. Like Bowers is going to be the layup receiver and Adams is going to have some weekly volatility because he's the vertical guy in this offense and Bowers is the safety blanket. You know, there was a lot of analysis about, and I know I've said this at times too. Oh, Luke Getsy, you know, the offense coordinator, he was there in Green Bay when they were just funneling the offense through Devontae Adams. That's not what this looks like. It's not quite as vertical as Adams's role has been in the previous 2 years in the Raiders offense, but he is still clearly the downfield guy. Whereas Bowers is just option routes, RPO plays, the quick hitting stuff that we've seen with Minshew before. I think Bowers is going to catch like 5+ passes in every single game. So he looks like one of the very few good picks at tight end this year. And I just think that's the way that split's going to go on the Raiders offense. If you're good, let's move to the Ravens offense here it's funny because you come away from this game from a fantasy perspective and like a lot of good feelings, right? Like, oh, Derrick Henry, he eventually had his day, 84 yards on the ground, a touchdown. Lamar, he, you know, his whatever day passing, but 45 yards on the ground. Zay Flowers certainly gets there with 11 targets, 91 yards, actually got some routes downfield. Like, yes, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Enough with the Mickey Mouse BS with Zay Flowers. Let's get him some big boy down the field routes. I thought that was nice to see. You know, Mark Andrews had a couple nice catches. Rashad Bateman had a couple nice catches. There weren't anything like crazy, but I don't know, man. I'm a little bit worried about the Ravens offense, mostly because of the pass protection. I know Max Crosby's great, but like, man, Max Crosby made some men into boys in this game. Let's just put it that way.
They also, they had a bunch of offensive line injuries throughout the summer too, right? So the offensive line is not exactly what you might have imagined it would be like back in the spring. But you're right. Like everybody, I don't know, you look at the box score totals and you're not troubled by anything you see on the Ravens side. You can tell yourself a little bit of a story about Mark Andrews, like sort of, you know, not a monster fantasy performance, but five targets, he catches four. It fits in into a normal game log for Mark Andrews. It was fine. We're still burning some targets on Nelson Agholor. I don't need to see a whole lot more of that.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's a lot, but they, you know, they're downfield shots that just end up being wasted plays. He's just not, you know, that guy, they've been trying to make him a difference maker for a while. And it's not really happening. I would rather see that to Flowers and to Bateman. You're right about the usage for Flowers. That was my big hope for him coming into the season, is we'd get to see some of those downfield shots. Like one or two a game is all I'm really asking for, because he was really, really good at it at the college level. Good performance by him. Reasonably good performance from Henry. But really, the difference between last year's team and this year's team is that the defense is just, to this point, through 2 weeks. And we can forgive, you know, week one against the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. But man, when Gardner Minshew and the Raiders put 26 on you, and it looks just like the week before, and you're just not making, you know, game changing plays. I mean, that's not who the Ravens were last year, right? That defense would stonewall you, and they ripped the ball away like 30 some times last year. And it's just that they don't look at all like that this season.
Yeah. You know, long season, these things can get right. But I do think this team looks pretty different than last year, both on both sides of the ball, really, which is to be expected because, you know, it's unfortunate they didn't win the Super Bowl last year. They lost in the AFC Championship game, obviously. But that was a great team last year, like one of the all-time teams from an efficiency perspective. So it's just natural that there's going to be some regression there. Just quick update, because I know we said box score, everything was pretty good. If you had Isaiah Likely and you were just like, oh, this is my every week tight end one, and I'm the smartest person in the room because I've got Isaiah Likely. A little bit of a downtick in week two. Mark Andrews, according to Dwayne McFarland, ran around on 78% of the dropbacks. Isaiah Likely drops down to 50%, which, you know, I think they need more of Likely. He almost had one great catch in the closing moments of the game, but it slipped away there. So I think we'll see more of him, but it's going to be volatile. He's not going to be just every week smashing. And, you know, we'll see. Andrews definitely a little bit better this week than the week before. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk through the games that we sort of care about right after this. All right, Andy, we're back. Packers 16, Colts 10. I don't really know what else to call this other than, one, kind of a weird football game, but if you're a sicko, and I'm definitely a sicko, you had to love watching this game, man, especially on the Packers side of it. Malik Willis, I wanted to, before I talk about what really we care about from the Packers offense, I do just want to give a little like tip of the cap to Malik Willis, who's been with this team for less than a month and had a 2.39 second time to throw in this game, which I'm highlighting that because it's almost a full second faster than his career average of 3.24, according to Next Gen Stats. That's pretty nice. Like, he just got the ball out and managed the game pretty well because he didn't have to do too much more than that, Andy Behrens, because the Packers ran the ball 53 times in this game. 53 times. A net rushing yard, 261 in this game. Josh Jacobs, 32 carries. I tweeted out the box score of the run game. Just like, oh, baby, this is football. And Danny Kelly from The Ringer said, the Packers with 53 rush attempts today, as far as I can tell, teams have rushed for more than 53 times in a game, just 11 times in the 2000s, according to Pro Football Reference. So, this was a real man's football fever dream here.
I believe that Josh Jacobs had 20 carries at the half and was over 100 yards. I think they may have been over 200 rushing yards at the half too. Super impressive. I just want to you also want to tip your cap to Matt LaFleur and the offensive coaching staff. I mean, this is kind of a manifesto. This was just like, in terms of adapting what you do to what you've got. You can't beat this. I mean, Malik Willis is a professional athlete and I have a lot of respect for him, but he had come into this week having never thrown for 100 yards in a game. Right. And we got a 12 for 14 performance with over 120 yards out of Malik Willis, touchdown. I don't know how you could have expected more. And then we get this like throwback the clock game from Josh Jacobs, who even had like an ugly fumble in this one at the goal line. And it didn't matter. They were able to hold on defensively. Just a classic, like, I don't know, 1976 style NFL game, right? Even like right down to the score. I mean, we had a 16-10 game with a million rush attempts. And that's what they had to do. Like, they aren't getting through these Malik Willis weeks by throwing the ball 35 times. Like, that's not going to be the recipe. It's, you knew this if you had Christian Watson, you've got Reed, you've got Wicks managed a touchdown in this one. Fun player.
Sick, yeah.
But like, you're just not going to be able to start these receivers in all likelihood. Cause there's no guessing which one, especially if they're going to attempt like 14, 15, 16 passes a game with Malik Willis, we're not going to be able to trust any of these receivers. Incredibly impressive that they got this win.
Super impressive. Yeah. I out of context, I love Matt LaFleur. Just, I think he's a great coach and he's a great play caller. I just have so much respect for him. And yeah, you're right. From a fantasy perspective, in the care don't care recap column, the Packers passing game is going right into the don't care column because, you know, I again, tip my cap to Malik Willis. And I think he played a good game in context of the situation and, you know, who he is as a player. But like, and you're going to get little glimpses of the receivers, right? You're going to get the Wicks touchdown. That was sick. Romeo Dobbs had an awesome catch down the field. Jaden Reed had a couple of impressive plays in the run game, of course. 37 yards on the ground for Jaden Reed on two carries. But you're not going to get, you know, consistent fantasy performances. So you're kind of in a tough spot if you have to start these guys in Malik Willis era. But I really think we saw the vision for why they signed Josh Jacobs in this game, Andy, because – you know, Josh Jacobs famously declared washed by Twitter about halfway through the Friday night football game in week one. You know, this is a guy who can handle big workloads. Yeah. That's the first thing. Like, they can leave him on the field on every down and they can give him the ball all game long. And I think that matters a lot right now to this team that doesn't want to be predictable, that wants to be multiple. And he can just pound it down the field in like gap scheme runs. So I think that was really, again, you saw why they targeted Jacobs in this game. Let's flip it over to the Colts here, who, I mean, this was, again, I don't want to do hyper analysis on Anthony Richardson every single game, but this was a rough performance for the young quarterback.
It was a really rough performance, both as a passer and just some of the decision maker, some of the decision making as a rusher as well, like when to give the ball up, when not to. Tough game for him. But that's, you know, people know the story, right? There's not a whole lot of career starts here at any level. It's going to be rocky, and it's okay that it's rocky, but it is going to be frustrating because I can understand that after 1 week you were like, oh man, I got the golden ticket player this year, right? Like, this is that wasn't even a perfectly clean game. He missed some stuff and he still finished with all these touchdowns, and here's this superhero throw. And like, there are going to be days like that, and there are going to be days like this where it's just, you know, you run up against a good team and a good coaching staff, and it just simply doesn't happen. So rough game from him. There's not really, I don't know, there's not much to point to in this receiving core and feel good about. Good enough game from Jonathan Taylor, but ultimately just not where Richardson needed to be. There was no way they were going to get a win playing like that.
No, it was pretty rough, and those days are going to happen for Anthony Richardson. It just is what it is. I will say, you know, I don't think there's a receiver that you can trust at this point from a weekly basis. Even Michael Pittman, who had 7 targets, it turned into 21 yards in this game. The fact that Alec Pierce has a legit role on this team makes it even more of a fantasy nightmare, because
yeah,
Pierce has been, you know, the coaching staff was quietly saying like, hey, he's having a good summer. And, you know, he's a player that certainly fits with Richardson more than with Minshew. And I don't think he was like worthless as a player, which is kind of what everybody talked about him like. And, you know, Josh Downs isn't even a part of this team yet, and he's going to have a role here. So I don't know what the Colts receiver room is going to look like, but it is unfortunate. It's a very talented room. It's just not Anthony Richardson is not at a point from a passing perspective to elevate anybody in this room right now. So that's just where we're at.
I also felt like when they, you know, last year when they debuted Anthony Richardson, like he was immediately looking for Josh Downs a lot. So like when Downs comes back, if he's close to 100%, he's going to see a bunch of targets too. And now we're talking about a receiving core that's going to have like, they're going to have like 4 guys that get 5 targets a game. And it's, I don't know. I don't want to, it's early. It's still the middle of September. I don't want to firmly declare Michael Pittman a miss, but it's feeling like it might be a little bit of a miss.
It's feeling like a bit of a miss. And Josh Downs is the best separator on this team by a long shot. You know, Adonai Mitchell's made he's made some splashy routes, but he's also made some mistakes as a route runner because he's a damn rookie receiver. So some of these like wide misses by Anthony Richardson are a little bit because I think Mitchell's not where he's supposed to be. But again, it's also a Mitchell. It's also a Richardson issue. So that just is where the Colts are right now. Let's go to Jets 24, Titans 17. I mean, first of all, Jets, let's put a pin in the Titans for a hot second. Let's start with the team that won this game, the Jets. Again, after, you know, a loss on Monday night, my feeling was kind of, hey, this is generally what we wanted to see from this offense, and Aaron Rodgers looked good enough. I kind of come away from this game, Andy, feeling the same. And I think that people have not calibrated yet to the Titans actually are a pretty good defense, especially their, you know, this is a Bears fan. Yeah. Like their defense, especially on the interior, is good. So some disruption here, some non-perfect moments in the passing game, that was going to happen. But Breece Hall escaping this with 8 targets and a touchdown and a, you know, relatively decent day on the ground, even if his backup, Braylon Allen, scored twice. I do think this was a solid offensive showing for the Jets.
Yeah, I feel like some Breece Hall managers are gonna be a little frustrated too by the Braylon Allen scores. First of all, I was really impressed by Allen, and I've seen plenty of him. Mm-hmm. He's a Big Ten running back. I've seen enough of him. It's crazy that he's still only 20 years old because he had 3 full great seasons at Wisconsin. He's 20 years old. That's wild. He was great. Like 230 some pounds. Big kid, but fast enough that he forces some weird angles, bad angles from tacklers. I thought he was really, really good. And he played, it's not like he only had 2 touchdowns or 2 touches and 2 touchdowns, right? Like he played a bunch and had plenty of touches. And if that's the kind of workload he's going to get moving forward, when we get into the bye weeks, you can think about flexing a guy like that. So he was plenty impressive. Quietish day from Garrett Wilson, but I still feel like there's going to be big ones ahead. But really promising. If you again, I know you're frustrated as a Breece Hall manager, but man, the receiving volume is what you really needed to see. And like the receiving touchdown was just flat out wide receiver stuff. I mean, there's not that many running backs in the league that run that route and make that catch like that. You know, I'd put Bijan in that class. I think Aaron Jones can do some stuff like that. Obviously McCaffrey can, but there's not a whole lot of running backs that can do that. That was super impressive.
Yeah. Your running back touches the ball 21 times and scores a touchdown. You're not legally, you are not allowed to.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's number one. And yeah, the Braylon Allen stuff, I do think the Jets need a second pitch in the backfield. You know, I like with, just what happened on a Monday and week one, where just Breece Hall, I think, was the only running back to really almost do anything. You know, that's not sustainable. Having him have a second pitch there, you know, not getting a bunch of wear and tear is a good thing. So yeah, the touchdowns, definitely it's annoying that they didn't go to Breece Hall, but I'm sorry, your running back only scored once instead of 3 times. That's a yeah. real bummer for you. Let's go to the Titans side where my feeling on the Titans offense, I tweeted this today, Andy, was at one point red zone, you know, flips over to this game and, you know, Scott Hansen tees it up and here we have Will Levis and he's about to uncork the ball. I was like, anything could happen here. Literally anything could be following up Scott Hansen teeing up Will Levis. Because, you know, his head coach famously early, the clip was going around from Sam Monson, formerly of PFF, now with the 33rd so team, where his head coach Brian Callahan is looking at Levis like, what the F are you doing? That was how it started. But I will say this play that showed up on red zone, I was like, I don't know what we're about to get. It was a pretty sweet long touchdown to Calvin Ridley. So, you know, Ridley, 2 touchdowns, 1 on the ground, 1 as a receiver. Will Levis kind of just doing the Will Levis thing. This will be what the Titans are going forward under Will Levis. I found it very funny, Andy, that I tweeted about this and I got so many replies of like, yeah, sounds a lot like Jameis Winston. And you know, you get replies from people on social media and you're like, do you actually listen to the podcast? Are you joking on me because I made this joke? Or do you think you're the one that came up with this? Because I said that. I said that he was this generation's Jameis Winston.
That is your turf. Yeah. And you are going to end up, I think, 100% right about that, because he this is not sustainable where he makes one play a game that absolutely flips things and is the dumbest thing that you've seen all week. Right. And that's happened now 2 weeks in a row. You just like whatever physical traits he has that make him an NFL starting quarterback, and he does have a big arm, and like the Will Levis highlights, the positive highlights, are always really impressive. Again, big arm. When it works, it's great, but you can't make, like, you know, 1 to 3 plays a game that kill a drive, give the other team the ball, sometimes give the other team the lead. Like, this can't go on. This can't possibly happen all season. Super frustrating to watch. I mean, I'm not a Titans fan, but if I were, this would just be agony, you know, absolute agony. Cause you can see it when it goes well. He's a pretty good runner too. Like, yeah, he can do things with his feet. Like, man, he is crying out to be coached. Somebody has got to break him of like the worst habit that any current NFL starting quarterback has, which I don't know why he thinks he can get away with things that, there's no way he was getting away with this stuff in the SEC. Like, that's pretty good. And you're certainly not going to get away with it in the NFL. This is just 2 weeks in a row with wild turnovers.
Absolutely wild turnovers for Will Levis. And that just, like, it just is going to be what it is. That's the Will Levis experience. Update on Isaiah Pacheco here from ESPN. This is from Jeff Darlington. Isaiah Pacheco is seen leaving the stadium on crutches and in a walking boot. So, yeah, if you have Pacheco, that's going to be tough. Make sure Samaje Perine is rostered in your leagues. Yeah. I'm sure we'll be talking about him on the waiver segment with Dalton on tomorrow's show. All right. Next game up here, Vikings 23, 49ers 17. Man, as somebody that was very skeptical about the Vikings overall this year, I'm eating a lot of crow. You know, I talk about things I'm right about. I will certainly tell you when I get things wrong. I get a lot of stuff wrong. I was definitely, I was looking like I'm going to be wrong on my Vikings skepticism, not just because the Sam Darnold experience has gone pretty well. And man, I'm so impressed with Kevin O'Connell as a coach, Andy Behrens. But
so impressed. Man,
honestly, I kind of think the biggest fantasy takeaway from this game on the Viking side, which, like, it's worth noting, they continue to have this offensive success despite the fact that their four good skill position players have all missed some degree of time. You know, TJ Hockenson on the PUP, Jordan Addison didn't play in this game. Justin Jefferson missed some time this game. He says it's like a thigh bruise or calf bruise. Doesn't sound too serious. Aaron Jones also missed some plays in this one as well. Despite that I almost want to put to the side. The thing I'm most, like, the biggest fantasy takeaway in this game is, like, if you got to start players against the Vikings defense, I kind of think you might be in a little bit of trouble here going forward, because maybe Kevin O'Connell's best move as a head coach, which I think he's made a lot of great moves as a head coach, was to fire Ed Donatell after his first season. You know, how often do we see teams stick with sunk cost hires and all kinds of things? They win 13 games with the guy that Kevin O'Connell hired to be the defensive coordinator. They fire him. They hire Brian Flores. The last 2 years, Flores, I think, has been one of the best defensive play callers in the NFL. After not blitzing Daniel Jones at all last week, Next Gen Stats notes that Purdy had almost faced the blitz on almost half his dropbacks, 46%, and he averaged 6.1 yards per attempt. He ate four sacks. The Vikings now have good defensive players while they have Flores still scheming things up. So I think if you're, I don't know, maybe overreaction, but I feel like if your fantasy players are going against the Vikings defense, you might be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, you know, like, corner has been a huge question mark for the Vikings defense too, and it just hasn't really mattered in the first couple weeks of the season. You're so right to call out O'Connell. This is what he's done with a total rogues gallery of quarterbacks and all these, like, rehab projects is super impressive over the last couple seasons. Obviously not just Sam Darnold, but last year with Mullins and Dobbs and everybody who took snaps for that team after the Cousins injury. Just really, really impressive stuff. To do it this week, for Darnold to get all this done this week when, you know, he had Jefferson sidelined for some time. And again, it doesn't seem like, who knows? It's just a player talking after a game, but Jefferson really seemed to downplay the nature of the injury, which is a good thing. But Addison out in this one, they were kind of on fumes, and Sam Darnold was good. We also know that Sam Darnold has a little bit of, it's not overwhelming. He's not like a fully accredited dual threat guy, but there's a rushing element to his game. So this is a pretty fun fantasy profile. And the place I was going to go is where you started, that we haven't seen what this looks like when it's fully operational and they just have all the playmakers yet. Like, that's not even going to happen until November. They get Hockenson back, even if it's limited snaps, limited basis, and they get a healthy Jefferson and Addison. I don't know, man. Darnold looks much better than he has ever looked in any NFL game. And I totally dismissed last week. I was just like, whatever, that's the Giants. Let's see how it looks against the Niners, who had you, like, in their building all last year. They know everything about you. Let's just see what that looks like. And it looked pretty great.
Looked pretty great. The Niners offense didn't look consistently great. I don't know if you have any big takeaways from this. Most of the players that you wanted to hit from a fantasy perspective. Yeah. You know, Ayuk's still not fully popping yet, but these guys get the Rams next week. Don't know if you've seen the Rams defense. Probably going to get some players popping off in that game.
Yeah, that's going to be a get right spot for the Niners for sure, for Purdy for sure, who wasn't great here. I think he ends up with a pretty good fantasy week, right? He goes over 300 yards. I think he was among the top scorers, but it was messy getting there. It was pretty ugly. Not a not a noisy week for Ayuk. I thought he was in a good spot here. I thought they'd get him right. But that obviously happens against the Rams, so we probably shouldn't worry about that. And then another 100 yards for Jordan Mason, who is just going to be absolute must start. Probably a top 10 fantasy back for however long Christian McCaffrey's out.
Let's keep rolling through the NFC West here and go to Seahawks 23, Patriots 20. This was an overtime win for the Seattle Seahawks. And man, we came away with a really nice performance from their passing game. I thought Geno operated the quick passing game really great. Saw this note from at Dante Cop Flem on Twitter. DK Metcalf and Jaxon Smith-Njigba are the first pair of teammates with 10 plus catches and 100 plus receiving yards in a game in Seahawks history, which I think is pretty notable considering there's been a lot of really good receivers in Seattle lately. So huge performance by them. Big breakout game for JSN with 16 targets and 12 catches. This was the Seahawks offense I was envisioning this year.
Yeah, this was great. And then like Tyler Lockett didn't have an especially noisy game, but late when they needed him.
A couple nice catches.
A couple really, really nice catches. So I know it was a quiet box score day, but he was an important player in this one when they needed it most. Charbonnet relatively quiet in relief of Kenneth Walker. There's obviously a big gap between those two. Walker probably coming back, probably going to be healthy, probably going to be just fine. Nice day from Geno, relatively clean day from Geno. I'll just remind people that we're a couple of years removed from him being the QB5 overall. So I feel like people think of him as like a low ceiling or no ceiling quarterback. He has literally been the QB5 within the last like 24 months. So like this is a good player who gets to work with JSN, DK Metcalf. DK was great today. I agree with you. This is what we thought we would get from the Ryan Grubb offense. And man, 44 pass attempts. That's nice to see.
Very nice to see. And Denver and New England are two pretty tough secondaries, two pretty tough pass defenses overall to start the year. So I think this unit will only get better as the year goes on. So if there was any JSN or DK Metcalf panic after week one, certainly not anymore at this point. On the other side for New England, the receiving box score is berserk. Hunter Henry catches 8 passes for 109 yards on 12 targets. The second leading receiver is Jalen Polk with 2 for 12 and a touchdown. But yeah. 2 for 12. So that was the Patriots passing game. But the impressive nature of their run game from week one carried over for week two. Not only did Ramondre Stevenson have a nice game running the ball, but Antonio Gibson also popped off a few big plays as well.
Yeah, Gibson looked really good. Jacoby Brissett completes 15 passes, 8 of them to Hunter Henry, which, fine, I guess we're adding Hunter Henry this week. I don't know. I feel like we've had the Hunter Henry experience. We know where this goes. It's going to be a pretty low-yield offense. Probably going to go back to another quiet week next week. But, not a lot to get excited about passing game-wise, but two running backs who really went off.
All right, as we continue to roll through the NFC West, we've got Cardinals 41, Rams 10. Andy Behrens, it turns out that the fourth pick in the draft, Marvin Harrison Jr., actually pretty good at football, which who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, we talked about that on FFL on Sunday morning. Like, I don't know. Sometimes in sports, we have a little too much information maybe over the last 10 years, right? There's too much information at our disposal. Nobody needed to know like what Marvin Harrison Jr.'s top speed was from week one. And that did not change my opinion of Marvin Harrison Jr., the player, in the slightest. You and Tice did an excellent job talking about that on Football 301, the routes he was running, the game conditions, all that. Like people don't achieve like 20 miles per hour. Generally, this wasn't even a thing like 20 years ago. Nobody ever talked in a person's miles per hour. That wasn't even a thing, but nobody ever hits that unless they're in like a breakaway situation and they're able to like just flat out run for like 30 or 40 yards. And then you reach maximum acceleration, then it's fine. I think he hit 20 miles an hour on one of his two touchdowns. The guy, I mean, he's great. Like he had 2 years in the Big Ten in which he was the best receiver in college football. Like he's great. We didn't need to worry about him. He was never slow, even though he didn't reach whatever, low bar you want him to in terms of next gen speed, whatever. He's great. He's absolutely great. And they beyond the fact that, you know, he saw a few more opportunities, I thought they moved him around a little bit more in this one. And that was great to see because he was mostly, you know, kind of stuck to one side doing the same thing. running some clear out stuff against the Bills, and it obviously didn't amount to anything. And he looked a little, you know, a little bewildered, right? Like he had some missed opportunities in that one, but they moved him around plenty against the Rams, and he was immediately great. Like it took him a quarter of football to basically become the wide receiver one in the week.
Yeah, it was a super impressive game. And let's also be clear that it sometimes can be tough in week one to calibrate the performance that you're watching to the opposing defense, because you just don't really know where teams are at. I think we know after 2 weeks that the Bills defense is somewhere up here. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see that my hand is really high, and the Rams are somewhere all the way down there, below my desk at this point. So that we definitely know that. So we've seen two polar extremes here. Not that this is what we're going to get, this type of up and down performances from Marvin Harrison Jr., but it's just that defense played really well in week one. They did a lot to take away the deep ball. There was, Tyson and I broke down all those conditions. And I'm not here to tell you that, like, oh, yeah, no, Marvin Harrison Jr.'s film was great in week one. It wasn't. I didn't think it was great. But, like, I also trust what I've seen a lot more before that than just a one-game sample size, even if that game is in the NFL. Harrison was great in this game.
James Conner was awesome in this game, by the way. I was even in his bad game, sometimes I always think James Conner looks really good. And I don't know, there might be an injury coming. I know it's part of his history, but man, when that guy's right, he's a really, really good runner.
Yeah, he looks sick in this game. Kyler Murray, I thought, was awesome. He literally had a perfect passer rating. And I would argue that he left at least two more touchdowns on the field for Marvin Harrison, too. I think Harrison, it's crazy to say he had four catches, 130 yards, and two touchdowns. I think he could have had an even bigger game if Kyler maybe sets his feet on one of those touchdowns. There's another where he was a little inaccurate, too. Just a bit of, like, you can nitpick the ball placement. But I thought Murray was overall great. I mean, the second touchdown to Harrison and the big play to Trey McBride down the field were both, I mean, fantastic. Like, very few quarterbacks are making that play. So Murray looks awesome. And your point about them moving Harrison around is well taken, because I thought the offense in week one, Andy, was way too static. Like you mentioned, Harrison in the snap side charter for him for RP was just on the line of scrimmage for over 90% of his snaps. That's a waste of a great player. And it was very Dorchy, right? I said that after week one. It was just very too much Greg Dorch. Here in week two, this is what the Cardinals offense I expected. They're multiple, they're moving dudes around, and they're big freaking guys too. I mean, Trey McBride is big, Harrison big, Michael Wilson big, like James Conner's a big, big guy in the backfield. I just thought this is the type of Cardinals offense I expected to see. All caveats noted that it was against the Rams defense and a Rams team that is overall in freaking trouble.
Yeah, this is really rough. I don't know, like, as we speak, I don't know the exact nature of the Cooper Kupp injury, but he obviously got ruled out pretty quickly when he exited this game. I mean, there's not a lot of hope here without, and I don't even think I'm going to do this in the pickups column this week. I'm not going to try to figure out which Rams receiver we might want, because, like, I don't know. It's not even a bye week yet in week three. I don't think we want any of them. Like, I don't need an attachment to a version of this offense that doesn't have either Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp. I hope that Cooper Kupp is okay and he's able to come back pretty quickly, but man, if they actually have to roll without those two, it's bleak.
Extremely bleak. Speaking of bleak, let's take one final break and then let's talk through the games that could have been an email. And there are a few bangers in this section. Let's get to them right after this. All right, Andy, we're back. Let's talk through the four games this week that could have been an email, starting with Browns 18, Jaguars 13. Maybe I'm being unfair to this game, but I didn't see very much of this game, to be honest with you. I'm not sure there's a ton of big burning takeaways to get out of this one.
Matt, they named the stadium after Trevor Lawrence for this game. It's like they had a little marketing gimmick where it was like Trevor something. I mean, my God.
It was Trev Urbank Stadium or whatever.
What a brutal game. What a brutal watch. Watson saved his fantasy day with a rushing touchdown. Fine. It still didn't look good. And it looks pretty dismal on the Jaguars side as well. Like, Lawrence just missed too many opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to put two Super Bowl winning head coaches on my radar in this segment, in the email segment. The first is Doug Peterson. Yeah. I'm my faith in what's going on in Jacksonville is very, very small. at this point. So I'll just leave it at that. Brian Thomas Jr. gets away with 94 yards in this one. Elijah Moore leads an NFL team in targets in the year 2024. That's great for my agenda. Let's keep it moving. Commanders 21, Giants 18. Malik Willis, geez. Malik Nabers has a huge performance in this one. Do we care about anything else?
Yeah, Nabers had like all of the passing yards. Daniel Jones finished with fewer than 200 passing yards, but damn near every one of them went to Malik Nabers, which is good to see.
18 targets.
Crazy. I mean, that is the way that we should want this offense to go, because there's really one fantasy relevant player. I know people were trying to make Wandale Robinson a thing, and perfectly fine player, but you know, he's not at the level of Malik Nabers. Malik Nabers is the difference maker here, and we're going to need him to see extreme volume if he's going to survive a Daniel Jones offense, and he kind of sort of did it here.
Yeah, on the other side, speaking of 18, Brian Robinson Jr. almost had damn near 18 carries. He had 17. He is, I think, the only player I'd want to start from Washington right now. I think if you have to start another Washington player, your fantasy team's in trouble.
I will say Eckler looks good. It's not vintage Austin Eckler, but it is much better than last year's version of Austin Eckler. It hasn't amounted to anything yet, really, but like when they actually get the ball to him in space, he's got a little explosion to him. Like he looks like he's back to whatever level you would normally expect him to be at this point in his career.
Next game up, Chargers 26, Panthers 3. Oh, my God. Okay, Andy, I got a couple of fun stats for you here on this one in the email. So, dear Andy Behrens, this is the email for this game. Dear Andy Behrens, J.K. Dobbins is the first Chargers running back to go back-to-back 100-yard games since Melvin Gordon in 2018. J.K. Dobbins, I'll have you know, also averaged 7.7 yards per carry in this game. If you divided that by two, if you literally halved his yards per carry, you would get 3.85, which is more yards per pass attempt than Bryce Young had in this game, 3.2. I think, honestly, I know that Quentin Johnston had two touchdowns in this game, but if I just wrote you that email about this game from a fantasy football perspective, I think that's all you would need to know.
Oh, Bryce Young is such a tough watch. It's never any one person entirely, but man, this was really, really ugly. And the pick was horrible. He finishes with fewer than 90 passing yards. This was an actual painful watch, like to the point that, I don't know, if this had been the only game available in my market, there's just no way I would have just been too uncomfortable to watch it. It was really, really ugly. Not that I was on this game constantly, but every time I looked up, the Panthers were doing something really, really regrettable. Really impressive performance by Dobbins. This is a great start to his season. It is worth noting that he's still, even though he's thriving right now, he's still splitting touches and splitting carries with Gus Edwards. And I'm pretty sure there's a Gus Edwards day coming. So like, let's not try to make this, I'm sure people are going to do this. Fantasy managers are going to do this. We're going to try to turn it into a thing where like, oh man, we want J.K. Dobbins to get 30 touches a game. He's the clear number one. I don't think
what
this
could
team.
Go wrong?
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. What could go wrong? I don't think they want that for Dobbins. I think this is the best possible use of him to run him in tandem with Edwards. And eventually Edwards is going to have a day too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's some nits you could pick in J.K. Dobbins' fantasy kind of resume, right? He's not going to get a ton of work in the passing game. Mm-hmm. Gus Edwards leads the team in carries. Those are not things you want from a fantasy back. But I love the way the offensive line is run blocking. I love the mentality of the team. And I love J.K. Dobbins as a rusher right now. He looks explosive. He looks good. He's hitting holes when they're there. He's a very talented running back that is making a. I mean, I think this is one of the coolest stories from the early season that's not going to get a ton of pub. But I do think right now he's a top five rusher in the league from a yardage perspective, and he's someone that I would be starting every week in fantasy.
I don't know how many guys in the history of the game have had both an ACL and an Achilles and come back from them successfully. He's got to be in really, really rare company. There can't be very many guys who have come back from both of those things. Also, I want to, again, mention that Quentin Johnston had a couple of touchdowns here. One of them was just a gift. One of them was just like him running alone in the end zone, easy pitch and catch. But the other one was, you know, single coverage guy with him, and he made a play and he actually held onto it, which is more than he would have done last year.
He looks like a functional NFL player where he did not last year, you know, and I did say that last year, I mean, it was the worst wide receiver performance I charted for any player last year. But I also think that he was thrown to the wolves pretty unfairly. Like they just asked him to do things in that offense last year that he was just never going to be able to do as a rookie receiver. So I think they're using him a little bit better this year, and he just looks a little bit more comfortable this year, which is good news because they need playmakers in that Chargers passing game. Final game here of week two, Sunday slate, Steelers 13, Broncos 6. Real quick on the Steelers. George Pickens, I think, looks great. I know he has 29 yards in this game. He's going against Pat Surtain. He had a couple plays called back. But I thought his film from week one was very good. I thought he had a couple of nice routes in this game. You wish, obviously, for a better stat line, but you're going to probably wish that for Steelers passing game players for most of the year. That is what it is. But, you know, Steelers look like the Steelers, and I just wanted to note that about George Pickens.
Yeah, no, the plays that were called back in this game, one was a deep shot that was just a beautiful ball by Justin Fields phenomenal catch by Pickens. Great play. That was you almost want him to pick up the flag because it was such a damn good play. And the other was a touchdown, and neither of these things were like infractions on George Pickens. So really impressive day by him that does not show up in the box score at all. Just one of those like negated plays what might have been situations. I thought Fields is both avoiding the highest highs of his Bears career, but he's also avoiding the lowest lows, right? Like the things that just wrecked drives when he was a Bear, the needless fumbles and the needless sacks, like they haven't really been there. But also like
7 yards lost on sacks is a gift.
That's crazy. That's not who he had been to this point. And if this is where he settles, it's not great for fantasy. Although obviously the rushing upside is still there. Cause we're just not seeing him as a super proactive rusher. Seems like he wants to hang in the pocket and make plays when they're there. Eventually he's going to pop a run and we're all going to be reminded that, oh man, at his best, this guy's like a top three. He has potential to finish top three at the position in any given week, but I'm happy for him, happy for the way his season is going. They can't possibly make a change at this point.
No, I agree. I don't see what the point would be. And I do feel like the longer that Fields plays, like the more they can do with him. I think they don't want him to lose the game. That's for sure. Sean Payton on my radar. On my radar, Sean Payton, because this offense, it's not going to work in today's NFL. They've got like big lumbering receivers, these max protect plays. Nobody's open. Bo Nix doesn't look ready. Nate Tice pointed out during the game that Bo Nix is clearly getting these long, long play calls. For a rookie quarterback who's probably swimming out there. Broncos are a full, I mean, this side of Carolina, they're the worst offense in the league, and I think that they're just a complete stay away in fantasy.
Yeah, they are. I can't give you a promising story on Javonte Williams, who had 11 carries for 17 yards in this one. Seemed really like, he was super involved and it didn't amount to anything. Couple of interceptions for Nix. The first was super ugly. 7 yards per attempt, which was a big jump from his opening week, but it doesn't look pretty. And there's no, you know, with a rookie who was always going to have growing pains, and who is not, you know, he's a rookie who wasn't like in that Caleb Williams, you know, Jaden Daniels class necessarily. Like this is going to be painful for a while.
All right, Andy, you got to get to the Bears. So unless you've got an award that you need to give out, I'm saying we skip that segment this week and we let you go. Just be a.
I will just point out that we had another situation in which a kicker had an opportunity at a record-setting attempt at the end of a half with like less than 30 seconds to go. This time it was Harrison Butker. It was Brandon Aubrey last week. And they ran him out onto the field and then thought better of it and brought him off. And that just sickens me. At some point this season, we're going to get one of those Janikowskis where they let somebody take a shot at 70 yards.
I love that Andy's just WTF moment of the week is constantly about kickers. But if he had missed that kick, they would have had the Bengals would have had an opportunity to go down and score at the end of the half. So I actually don't mind that one. The Aubrey, and especially because I don't have Harrison Butker on any fantasy teams. I have Brandon Aubrey, which is why I was with you in being enraged last week. But this week I think
the Aubrey one was like 4 seconds or something like that. Granted, this one was like 24 or 29, something like that.
All right, that is going to do it for us today. Hell of a week, too. A lot of surprises, a lot of stuff to dig our teeth into. A lot of things you people out there are probably panicking about. which is great because the week two People's Panic Meter is open. Make sure to send in what you're panicking about to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Try to get it done earlier on Monday than later, even though we are taping this episode later than we did last week, which is good going forward. So again, Dalton Del Don will join me for that on Tuesday. Until then, we're out.